Doctors Today. Remarkable discoveries in the world of medicine.
You know of a child who does not seem to be seriously ill, but who is plainly not in good health. Do you have any reason to suspect that this child may have some unusual disease? If you are puzzled by this child's behavior, by all means listen to this program. American Medical Association, in cooperation with the National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations, presents Doctors Today, a weekly report on the progress of medical science. This week, a report on a disease that must be discovered in the early stages to save a child's life. We first hear Dr. W.W. Bauer speaking for the American Medical Association. Dr. Bauer.
Let's picture a scene at a railroad crossing. The red lights are flashing. The warning bell is ringing. A fast train is roaring down the track. But a small child stands between the rails, not realizing the danger. What father or mother would hesitate to risk his life to save that child from instant death? 1 out of 100 might hesitate until it was too late. I think we could count on the other 99 to take the risk. But usually the duty of the father or mother is not so clear. The child is not in danger of sudden death, nor can they be sure that he is actually in danger at all. Yet death may come slowly, but just as surely. Even though there are reasons for worry, they may hesitate for hours, days, weeks, and even months. We usually think of cancer as a disease that kills 1 out of every 8 adults. But among all diseases, cancer is the third highest cause of death among children from 3 to 10 years of age, and the 6th highest from 10 to 14 years of age. Some cancers cannot be cured, but others can if they are discovered and checked in the early stages. For warning signals that flash along the path of a child's life, we ask you to listen to the story of Jeffrey Barton.
When a child is dull and slow to learn, parents naturally wonder why, and often ask the family doctor for the answer. But Jeff Barton wasn't that kind of a boy. As a matter of fact, at 10 years of age, his marks were second highest in 6th grade, and his hobbies were chemistry and mechanics. Jeff's dad had already decided that his son would someday follow in his footsteps as an electrical engineer. But gradually he discovered that it wasn't going to be quite as simple as all that.
Oh, that was wonderful, Jeff. Wasn't it, Dad?
Yeah. Now, how about giving us a little boogie-woogie, huh?
Miss Leonard says I shouldn't play boogie-woogie anymore.
Oh, why not?
Because she says it'll spoil my touch for classical music.
Oh, who cares about that? Give us one of those Fats Waller numbers, Jeff. Come on, huh?
No, Bob. He's got talent for concert music. Why get him all mixed up with a lot of different styles?
It's a difference. Just a hobby, isn't it?
Well, Miss Leonard says he shouldn't think of his music as a recreation.
Why not?
Because he has such a remarkable talent.
Oh, that's what a lot of music teachers say to keep the proud parents interested in shelling out more money for lessons.
Oh, but she isn't like that, Dad.
Well, how do you know she isn't?
I'll tell you how we know. Miss Leonard has decided that she doesn't want to give him any more lessons.
Wow, that's a new angle.
She feels that she's done as much as she can for Jeff. She wants him to study under a concert pianist.
Oh, wait a minute. Jeff isn't that good.
Well, how do you know he isn't?
At 10 years of age, Jeff played concerts?
Well, not for another 4 or 5 years, perhaps.
And besides, who would he study under?
She says that if Max Gruen will take him, it'll be a...
Who's Max Gruen?
Oh, you've seen his name in the papers. He plays with the symphony.
Sorry, I don't read the column by our eminent music critic. You see, Jeff, I ain't got no culture. I'm just a plain old electrical engineer.
Oh, Bob.
Jeff, I thought you were interested in becoming an engineer, too. How about your chemistry?
I still like chemistry.
You wouldn't want to go around pounding a piano for the rest of your life in order to earn your living, would you?
Well, yes, Dad, I think I would.
You mean you want to be a struggling musician?
Well, Bob, if he has to struggle, I'd rather see him struggling to do what he wants instead of what you want him to be.
Oh, is that so? You think a 10-year-old boy really knows what he wants for his life's work?
Well, I'd at least like to give him a chance to find out if he has the talent.
Now, don't you try to make me out to be a bullheaded father. Have it your way. Take him to this Max Gruen, and if Max will condescend to take him on as a pupil, I think I'll be able to find the money to pay for Jeff's lessons.
Won't you sit down, Mrs. Parson?
Yes, thank you.
And will you care for a cigarette?
No, thank you.
Well, I think your boy may have something.
Oh, you really do?
It will take some time before I can be reasonably certain that it is worthwhile to go on with him.
Yes, of course.
And even then, I will make no promise that he will be a great musician. But then, I do not make that promise to anybody.
Oh, of course.
But the boy has more talent than any boy of his age that I have seen in a long time.
Oh, I'm so glad you think so.
But it is too early to say that the piano is his instrument. Maybe he would do better on another instrument. The violin, or maybe even the trombone. Oh. Maybe we've got a wolf in sheep's clothing. We shall see what we shall see.
Sometimes little things happen in a home that mean far more than would appear on the surface. After Jeff Barton had been studying piano under his new teacher for 10 weeks, an incident occurred that his father and mother failed to understand. Jeff finished playing a composition, and his mother said,
"Very nice, Jeff. You'd better get at your homework now, dear."
"Okay, Mom."
"Hey, you know, Jeff, I heard that piece played over the radio the other night."
"Yeah? So what?"
"Of course, it was by some well-known artist, but..."
"I bet you can't even remember his name."
Well, let's see. No, I guess I can't."
"I knew you couldn't. I know who you're talking about, and I heard him play it. It was corny."
"Well, I didn't think so. I thought he played it very well."
"Now, let's not have any arguments. Run along, Jeff."
"Well, why should he try to criticize me?"
"I wasn't criticizing you."
"Why don't you stop picking on me all the time?"
"Oh, he wasn't picking on you."
"He was, too. He's hoping I won't be good, so I have to be a dopey old engineer like him."
"Now, wait a minute. Why do you think I'm letting you take piano lessons?"
"Because Mom and everybody else thinks I'm good. Everybody but you."
"Jeffrey, you go right to your room and do your homework."
"Oh."
"Go on now. Not one more word out of you, or I'll ask Dad to give you the spanking you deserve."
"Oh, all right. You're always on his side."
Well, that was quite an exhibition, wasn't it?
Bob, I was simply dumbfounded.
Well, maybe this is what comes of studying under a great virtuoso. Maybe he's learning artistic temperament along with his finger exercises.
But Max Gruen is such a quiet, pleasant man. I don't think he ever flies off the handle.
You can't tell about those artists.
No, I think it's just that we've showered so much praise on Jeff that it's gone to his head. Next time he gets out of line, I want him punished in a way that he'll remember for a long time.
Bob and Mildred Barton were confident that a firm hand would quickly make Jeff the fine, well-mannered, happy youngster he had always been. But that confidence didn't last long. To their astonishment, he was becoming surly, disobedient, and given to sudden fits of temper. Jeff was punished in all sorts of ways, but nothing they did seemed to produce any effect. They began to suspect that Max Gruen was at fault, even though Jeff didn't complain of ill treatment. But they were even more surprised and shocked when Max Gruen sent for them. When he had them seated in his studio, he began to pace the floor rather nervously. Finally, he came to the point.
"Mr. and Mrs. Barton, I have a confession to make to you, and I feel that I owe you an apology."
"Well, I'm not exactly surprised."
I beg your pardon, but why do you say that?"
"Well, from the way that Jeff has been behaving lately, we suspected that he was having trouble with you."
"Really, we never dreamed that such a change was possible in a boy's character."
"Oh, I'm sorry, but this I did not know about."
"Well, maybe he behaved himself around you, but he sure blows off steam at home."
"Oh, I see. And so you think that I must be at fault?"
"How else can we explain it? He never acted this way before.
I will not try to explain, nor do I apologize for his conduct, because our relationship has been very pleasant. That is why it is so difficult for me to tell you that it would be unwise for him to continue as my pupil.
Oh, you mean you don't think that he's showing enough improvement?
Mrs. Barton, you will recall that I told you that it would take a little time before I could be sure that he had a great talent?
Yes, I remember.
Now, do you call 4 months a little time?
No, I would call 3 weeks a little time, but not 4 months.
Seems to me that you put us to quite a lot of expense before you made up your mind.
Mr. Barton, I have written a check covering the entire stipend that you paid me. You will kindly accept this check with my most profound apologies.
Oh, now, wait a minute. It isn't a matter of money exactly.
If you feel that I have affected the moral character of your boy, I am deeply sorry, but I am sure that Jeffrey will tell you that I have not been a harsh taskmaster.
Mr. Gruen, I simply can't understand your attitude.
It is very easy to explain, Mrs. Barton. You see, after Jeffrey had been taking lessons for 3 weeks, I was convinced that I had a prize pupil. After 10 weeks, I was not quite so sure. But now, Jeffrey is not as good as when he first came to me.
Well, how do you explain that?
Well, it is very mysterious, Mr. Barton, but for some reason, there has been a loss of dexterity in his fingers, especially the right hand, and a lack of coordination between the hands.
Why, that sounds serious.
Oh, it may not be serious, sir. Simply a lack of touch, which is no better or no worse than you would find in a person who had no talent for the piano.
What might bring about a condition like this?
Well, I'm not qualified to answer that question. However, since you say he presents a behavior problem, perhaps you had better consult a physician.
Max Gruen left it up to Bob and Mildred to break the bad news to Jeff. It was a task they dreaded. Where once it might have been fairly easy, now they were faced with a high-strung, hot-tempered son whose reactions were completely unpredictable. As they waited for him to come home from school, they talked over their next step.
I don't think we'd accomplish anything by sending him to a doctor.
Oh, but Bob, we have to do something. He's getting completely out of hand, and now he's losing his biggest interest in life.
I think that's the solution to the whole problem.
How can it be?
Now, look at it this way. For months, our 10-year-old has been under terrific pressure.
You still blame Max Gruen?
No, I don't. What I mean is that he's been under a great strain because he was trying to prove to us, and especially to me, that he ought to be allowed advanced study on the piano. He's cracked under the strain. That's what's happened.
That could be, of course.
Mildred, we've been trying to make a child prodigy out of a perfectly normal boy. No wonder he blew his top. It's our own fault.
You want to stop all piano lessons?
For a while, yes. Give him a chance to settle down.
Shh. I think I hear him coming. Jeff?
Yes, Mom?
Dad and I are in here, dear. Will you come in a moment?
Okay.
You'd better tell him.
I will.
Hello, Jeff. Come on over and sit down.
How come you're home so early, Dad?
I took the afternoon off.
Jeff, Mr. Gruen sent for us, so we went over to his studio and had a long talk with him.
I know what you're going to say. He thinks I haven't been practicing enough.
No, he doesn't, dear. He thinks you've been trying very hard, but he thinks you're still a little too young for advanced study.
He's got another boy who's only 11.
Well, it all comes down to this. He doesn't think you're showing enough improvement, so he wants you to stop studying under him for a while.
He does? For how long?
Oh, a year or two.
Oh, now, darling, don't take it that way. You aren't going to cry, are you, dear?
No.
You've been trying too hard, son. Now, take it easy for a while, and someday Mr. Gruen will be glad to have you back.
Bob Barton was now certain that he had the answer to Jeff's peculiar behavior. 3 weeks passed. Then one evening when he came home, Mildred quietly took him by the arm, led him to his study, closed the door. Then she handed him Jeff's report card. He looked it over for a moment and said,
"That was bad last month, but this is a disgrace. Just look at this. It's taken him just 3 months to drop from second in his class to 22nd.
Yes, it's just beyond belief that this could happen to Jeff.
Now, look here. We can't go on this way. Where is he?
He's in his room lying down.
Let's get him in here and really lay down the law. No movies, no allowances, no...
Bob, why won't you face that? I wanted to take him to a doctor, and you said...
Yes, I know what I said.
He hasn't been near that piano in weeks. Lately, I've told you that he's been complaining of headaches, and you say, give him aspirin. Well, is that help?
Well, for Pete's sake, what do you want to do?
Bob, have you noticed how clumsy he's getting lately? Stumbling over chairs, knocking over glasses.
Well, now that you mention it, I have.
This evening, I watched him coming along the sidewalk on his way home from school. He's beginning to walk in a very peculiar way.
What do you mean, peculiar?
Well, other people might not notice it, but I certainly can. He walks as if he weren't quite sure of his balance, with his legs spread a little farther apart than they used to be.
Oh, good Lord, Mildred. What does it all add up to?
I haven't any idea. But I think we'd better find out pretty quickly.
I wonder if Dr. Kramer is still in his office. Let's see if we can't get an appointment for tomorrow.
For 3 months, Bob and Mildred Barton had had a chance to watch the changes that were taking place in their son. First, in his personality. Second, in his ability to develop his talents. And finally, in signs of physical distress. A physician could have told them that the warning lights had been flashing for some time and that the alarm bell was now ringing loudly. They took Jeff to Dr. Kramer's office the next afternoon. And after a careful examination, he took Bob and Mildred into his office.
Well, you've given me a very complete history of Jeff's symptoms as you observed them, and I hoped that an examination would tell me enough so I could give you my diagnosis. But I still can't give you the answer.
You do feel that something is definitely wrong, Doctor.
Oh, yes, yes, I know something's wrong, right?
Couldn't you tell us in a general way what it might be?
Well, there appears to be a disturbance of the central nervous system.
And what might be causing that?
There's so many things that might be responsible that at this point I wouldn't even hazard a guess.
Well, when will you know what it is, Doctor?
First, I want to get Jeff into the hospital for a series of tests and further observation.
We'll take him in whenever you wish.
Well, let's make it this afternoon at 4 o'clock.
Hmm? All right, Doctor.
I'd also like to call in one of our neurologists to make a complete examination. We'll also need an X-ray specialist.
Go right ahead. Call in whoever you need for consultation.
All right. Now, it's going to take a couple of days to complete our tests and to make our diagnosis. But I won't keep you waiting 1 minute longer than I can help.
Oh, I know you won't, but can't you give us just one little hint as to what we might expect?
No matter what I told you, I still wouldn't be sure at this point. And I don't want to give you any unnecessary worry.
There are times when 48 hours can seem like 48 weeks. It was very quiet in the house with Jeff away, and with the question, what's wrong with him, always uppermost in their minds. Now they realized full well that they should have taken him to a doctor months ago. Early the next morning, they were called to the hospital, and Dr. Kramer introduced them to Dr. Murray Spencer.
Mr. and Mrs. Barton, this is Dr. Murray Spencer.
Well, how do you do, Doctor?
How do you do? How are you, Doctor?
Dr. Spencer specializes in neurology.
Oh, yes.
We've just come from a consultation with Dr. Butler, an internist, and Dr. Hoyt, our X-ray specialist.
Well, this sounds very serious.
Unfortunately, it is quite serious, Mr. Barton. And in a condition of this kind, it could be hopeless, but we want to assure you, first of all, that the condition is not too far advanced and that there is better than an even chance that we can bring him through. Probably with a gradual but complete restoration of normal muscular function.
I'm afraid what you're saying is hard for us to understand, Doctor.
Well, let me put it this way. This condition is often fatal, but there's a good chance that an operation will not only save your boy's life, but he may not suffer any after effects from the disease.
But what is the disease?
He has a brain tumor.
Oh, no.
Now, if you wish, I'll describe the exact position. And
No. Bob,
It's all right, Bob. I have a... Dr. Spencer, if you'll call a nurse.
Yes, of course.
Let me help you, Doctor.
All right, Bob. Put your arms just under her knees.
Yes.
That's it. There we are.
Miss Adams, this woman is not being admitted as a patient. We had some rather bad news for her, and she's fainted.
Will you apply the usual measures, Miss Adams? Check her pulse and report to me. Hmm?
Yes, Doctor.
She'll be all right in a moment, Mr. Barton.
Oh, yes. I feel sure she will. You know, I examined her only a few weeks ago. Why don't we go outside for a moment, huh?
All right.
Perhaps we'd better close this door.
Now, Bob, as Dr. Spencer explained, there's still a good chance that an operation will bring Jeff through safely. But if we're going to save the boy's life, it only gives you a choice of a brain surgeon.
Dr. Spencer, is this tumor a cancer?
It's probably a cancer, although it may be a benign tumor. In either case, it must be removed at once.
Cancer.
Once cancer was only a word that stirred a vague fear in their minds, like the mention of the atomic bomb. Now it was a word that haunted them in their dreams. Cancer, in their 10-year-old son. Now they knew that it happens in children all too often, and that it often means death, partly because parents don't bring children to their doctors soon enough. Had they given Jeff his fair chance to win his fight for life? When they saw him off to the operating room, they returned to his room and sat silently staring into space. Presently, there was a knock on the door. And when Bob said,
"Come in,"
the door opened and there stood...
"Why, Mr. Gruen."
"I'm so glad to see you. Won't you come in and sit down?"
"Yes, of course. I hope you'll forgive me for intruding at a time like this."
"Oh, it was so nice of you to come."
"You see, I came to know your boy so well, and when Miss Leonard told me how our good pupil was afflicted, I could not resist coming to see him before he went up for his operation. But I see I'm too late for that."
"Yes."
"Oh, well, I could not have given him more courage than he already has. But perhaps I can give you a little more hope. You see, Mr. and Mrs. Barton, two of my brothers are physicians, and for many years, medicine and surgery have been... shall we say, hobbies?"
"Oh, is that so?"
"Yes. You see, cancers in childhood are often overlooked until the late stages because many of the symptoms are like those in acute infectious diseases."
"Well, that wasn't true of Jeff."
"No, but of the types of cancer that come during childhood, Jeffrey has one that gives the most promise of complete recovery. There is cancer of the bone, the eye, and of the blood, as well as the brain."
"Cancer of the blood is leukemia, isn't it?"
"Yes, no hope there. A bone cancer means amputation, usually. Eye cancer often leads to blindness. There are still other types that appear rarely."
"Come in." "Oh, Dr. Kramer. Dr. Kramer, I want you to meet Mr. Gruen."
"How do you do?"
"Very pleased to meet you."
"Bob and Mildred, I've been called out on an emergency, and since I was just an observer in the operating room, I decided I'd better go."
"Oh, of course.
But it's nearly over, and everything's going very well so far."
"Oh, thank you for dropping in, Doctor."
"Not at all. Goodbye now."
"Goodbye."
"Ah, this is very encouraging news. When it goes well this far in a boy his age, we have high hopes."
"Mildred, it sure looks good for our boy."
"Mr. Gruen, if it goes all right, do you think he'll ever be as good as he was as a musician?"
"Well, Mrs. Barton, afterwards there is great need for a... re-education of the muscles and for a gradual development of lost functions. I will make it my business to come to your house very often and help him. There will, of course, be no charge for that. Only my interest in Jeffrey's future."
"Oh, Mr. Gruen, you're so kind."
"It is a joy to be kind to a fellow musician."
It was a sad-eyed, pale, unhappy Jeff Barton who came home some weeks later, thin and worn. But his eyes brightened when he heard that Max Gruen was coming to visit him. It turned out to be more than a visit. Mr. Gruen played for him, and he loved that. Furthermore, Max Gruen came again and again, and his admiration for his teacher blossomed into a friendship, until there were days that went like this.
No. You did better than that for me last time, Jeff."
"I did not."
"You did, too. Now try it again."
"Oh."
"Oh, come on now."
"All right."
"Ah, there you see. You see, Mrs. Barton, he's as good as he ever was when he tried."
"Yes, isn't he?"
"Oh, I'll make you good enough for the symphony. I'll make you good enough for concerts, or I'll break a roll of rye bread over your head."
Mm-hmm.
now present Dr. Frank L. Rector, Secretary of the Michigan Cancer Control Committee. Dr. Rector.
Jeff Barton's story to which you have just listened is a common experience repeated day after day in many homes. Contrary to public opinion, cancer is a frequent and very serious disease in young people. While it strikes most often after middle life, it is a well-known fact that in some states, cancer causes as many deaths under age 20 as do diphtheria, measles, acute rheumatic fever, infantile paralysis, and scarlet fever combined. The types of cancer affecting children differ in many ways from those found in adults. In addition to the central nervous system, the kidneys, bones, eyes, and blood-forming organs, the spleen and bone marrow, are the tissues most often involved in childhood cancer. Cancer of the blood-forming organs is known as leukemia and is one of the least hopeful types of childhood cancer that physicians encounter. Cancer in all ages is a serious matter in that it always proves fatal if neglected too long. Those types commonly found in childhood are of more immediate concern because in the beginning the symptoms are often mistaken for other and less serious diseases. Cancer in children runs a much shorter course than in adults, its duration being measured in weeks and months instead of years as in the older ages. Some of the more prominent symptoms of cancer in childhood are changes in personality, an obedient, studious, likable youngster developing opposite characteristics when the growth is in the brain, disturbances of vision when the eye or optic nerve is involved, painful swellings around joints with pain, often worse at night with some fever and restlessness associated with cancer of bone, a fullness over the kidney region when this organ is affected. Any of these symptoms will arouse the suspicion of cancer in the physician's mind and should also cause parents, teachers, physical education instructors, and all others with whom the child comes in contact to realize that something is wrong that demands careful examination and care. Cancer in children will be better controlled when a few simple facts are kept in mind. It must be appreciated that cancer can and does occur in younger age groups, that a knowledge of major signs and symptoms of the types of cancer encountered in these ages is essential to early recognition, that prompt diagnosis of suspicious conditions with prompt and proper treatment as soon as cancer is found will go far toward saving the patient's life. A final word of caution. Parents should not unduly magnify every sign and symptom just mentioned as being cancer in their children, but should be concerned when such symptoms continue for more than a few weeks without a definitely known cause. It is far better to know the truth than to fear the truth where cancer is concerned, for the earlier it is discovered, the greater is the chance of cure.
Thank you, Dr. Rector.
Doctors Today is presented by the American Medical Association through the facilities of the National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations. This program is presented on behalf of the thousands of physicians who are working night and day to protect and preserve the lives of 141 million Americans. The American Medical Association invites you to join us again next week to hear another report on the progress of medicine and surgery in America. Doctors Today, written by William Murphy, comes to you through the facilities of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. The orchestra is under the direction of Bernard Berquist, with original music composed by Emil Soderstrom. The entire production is under the direction of Norman Felton. Heard in the cast were Donald Gallagher, Sonda Love, Tommy DeLeon, Kurt Kupfer, Arthur Peterson, Jess Pugh, and Bob McKee. Your announcer is Henry Cook. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.